All right, welcome everyone to the first episode of Time for Action. My name is Jeff, and this is my co-host, Josh.
Hello.
So we're both teachers in the New Orleans area, and we just wanted to do a new show about teaching and how it connects with labor and the labor movement as a whole. Well, anyway, you had a story you wanted to talk about how teachers are stressed out and their mental health isn't in a good place.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier when I said trying to survive the nonsense. Because there's so much thrown our way. If you're not prepared for it or you're not, you know, trained to handle it, it could be like very stressful.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, it could get pretty rough.
Yeah.
And some say that teachers get so much time off, so it should be the easiest job in the world, but they don't realize that a teacher's job is never like over, because once you don't actually clock out, because you got to go home, grade papers, write lesson plans, do all the other billions of things that you have on your list, and then go back in the next day and start all over again.
Yeah, there's a lot of that to it. And then I'm not sure how it works where you're at, but in my sort of situation, we have an administrator who sort of signs a lot of extra, like, it's viewed by a lot of teachers completely unnecessary, and it's sort of like you're filling out spreadsheets like you would do, like every freaking office job is now. You're just like filling out a spreadsheet, but you're doing it with like, this is what they scored on this first test, and this is what they score, you know, this is what they scored on the second one, and this is what your projection is for their final one. And then like after every one of them that they do, you have to do a new projection, and it's just this like mind-numbing and ever repetitive just spreadsheet that you have to fill out like 12 times a year.
Yep. Well, we have a weekly one like that where we have to turn in, I guess, it's a report about how each student in the class scored on their test, who needs to be addressed about who's failing, and other situations like lesson needs to be retaught and all these other things. And yeah, it's a weekly situation, so imagine having 40 plus kids having to like constantly turn in this paperwork about the same stuff over and over and over.
When you
do turn it in as well, there's no response from it. Like you're turning in paperwork for no reason because you don't get any feedback from it. So
right, you just do it and the box is checked, and then you don't have to worry about it until it rolls back around the next time.
So
this report that we're talking about, it's available on the 74million.org. There's a link to a survey completed by the American Federation of Teachers, and the main question that was asked, that sort of like the lead of this story, is 61% of teachers feel stressed out, and 58% of them say that their mental health is not good because of the sort of stresses and strains that goes with the job. And it's not just the workload, like that's a lot of it and it's a huge part, but the pressure and evaluation of all of this is a huge factor.
Most of the time it's primarily just relationships with the administration.
Yeah, how would you say like your relationships with the administration are at your school?
My personal relationship with the administration is kind of, I guess, standoffish. I don't have a really big problem with her, but I understand that she's causing problems for my coworkers. So it's like, I don't want to like be buddy-buddy with you if you're messing with people that I care for, because they were there before she was. So, you know, I'm on their side more than her side. So it's a, you know, I'm watching you with very careful eyes. Don't step to me any kind of way, because I may end up turning on you easily, because I see how you are to other people, so I could expect you to do the same to me. So it's always just being cautious and just like being aware of what you're doing or how you approach certain things when dealing with them. Because I mean, she can be pretty spiteful, so gotta be careful.
That's the other thing too, is that like these the way that I look at it most of the time is even the nicest administrator in the world, the nicest person that you can ever find that would, you know, do that job, which, you know, there are like nice human beings that would do it, but they are subject to all of the human sort of, you know, whatever you want to call it, flaws or vices, blah blah blah, and they necessarily have sort of like this power over you, right? They are able to control your work situation. They're able to make it so that your performance, I mean, the performance evaluations, they're based, you know, in 25% now, or is it 25 or 33? Because they just added VAM scores in, which is going to be a whole other thing. And maybe we can do an episode on VAM scores in the future, because let me tell you what, they're bad. But
right.
The thing is that they have a rubric, and the system that we grade teachers by is called Compass. And 1/3 of it, I think it's a third. I think it's a quarter, because we have SLTs, VAM, the observations, and we also have the testing. The part that's observation, there is a significant portion of your grade that that is decided by the observations that the principal or whoever your administrator is.
Right.
My producer is yelling from the other room that it's 50%.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I'm just getting breaking news happening. The observation is 50%. The VAM and the SLTs are 35 and 15%, respectively, I think. My wife is the producer, and she wants to know if she's getting paid. You're getting paid the same as we are.
Yes.
But anyway, there's a significant portion of your evaluation score that's decided by your administrator. So as a necessary result of that is the point that I'm trying to make. As a necessary result of that, your relationship with your administrator can influence that score, right? Because I generally have a very positive view of people in general, but I also know that people will they make logical decisions. If somebody at their workplace, or somebody that works for them or whatever, works under them, is making it so that they don't meet their numbers, they would do everything that they can to get rid of that person or make them look bad or whatever it is. So right. it's a really tough situation. I always just sort of like look at administrators as, not us in a lot of ways, no matter how nice they are.
Yeah, definitely nowhere near teacher's level. See, in my situation, our principal, well, she was a teacher, is what I'm trying to get at. And she's now at a vocational school, so that's away from what she used to, what she taught. So she was a teacher, which is good, but she wasn't in the vocational area. So it's kind of, she's still in a lost place. So she doesn't know how to, I guess, lead us in the right direction as a proper principal should, because she doesn't have any experience teaching teaching yet.
Yeah, I sort of don't, trying to consider how I feel on the teacher who's taught, like my principal was a teacher who taught for a very long time in that same school in Jefferson Parish, and she's a very nice person. She's definitely, obviously, a teacher. But the problem is, I find with that sort of a relationship, and you know that they're a teacher, like once they're an administrator, they're still an administrator, though, right?
Do they change that harshly, though?
The thing is that they have the power to change these sorts of things in their hands,
right.
And they're like that. No matter what. Like, whatever the superintendent and the school board are making them do, they're gonna do it, or they're gonna lose their jobs, right?
Yes, that's why I feel that it falls to, like, she's told us that before. Her policy, she follows policy by the regardless of whatever the teacher's request or whatever. If it doesn't fit into policy, she's gonna protect herself over us. So if it steps on our feet, she doesn't care, because she wants to keep her job, regardless of whatever happens at school.
Well, I guess it's good that it's laid in that stark of terms. At least you know where you're standing.
Yeah. But then it falls to the problem where we have a system that's fit for, normal K-12 English, math, sciences, and all that kind of stuff being forced on a vocational, skill-based place.
Yeah,
and
that's not her expertise.
A bunch of debate that we should have, but we're not allowed to speak because we have to follow policy.
and the policy is all, it's not, as much as the administrator is sort of, they're supposed to, they're the direct relationship that you have, but right. they take their marching orders no matter what from 501 Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So they are there for a relationship with you, but mm-hmm. they're also there to get their stuff done and to get, right. you know, that's the agenda that they have to, you know, finish through.
That leads to, I guess, another little problem, because I guess communicating that the decisions are being made from 501 or from higher than them, or their NEDs or whatever representative they speak to are, I guess, making the decisions. And it's kind of like the teachers hold grudges against her for just enforcing something that they've told her to do. Mm. And it causes a problem for the relationship at school, because there's no transparency of like discussions.
Right.
Like if it was more yeah. understood that way.
Yeah, they're the go-between. They're the go-between right. between, you know, the whoever your network person is. Because the way our parish is organized, we have the superintendent's office, we have like what, 5 or 6 different networks that we have. And, you know, instead of the principal being, you know, autonomous in the school or whatever, we have this, you know, one person who's over the principal, who's in charge of like 10 schools or right. however many it is. The principal functions as like the person who like manages the budget of the school and like is the sort of like line of bureaucracy between this one that's really powerful, which is the NEDs.
Right.
It's really, really weird.
It's awkward. It's really awkward.
Uh-huh.
I guess all the stress isn't directly from them. I understand that. But yeah,
it's like an unsustainable system.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the finding, this is a national survey that you posted. It was in association with the American Federation of Teachers and the Badass Teachers Association, which is sort of a hilarious name.
Right.
Some of the key findings... people who know teachers best, the parents, co-workers, and students, showed much more respect for teachers than elected officials and media members, many of whom rarely set foot in a classroom. Yeah, that's an interesting one to me, because like when you go on the news or whatever, when they talk about education, or when you have like these politicians talking about teachers, when has a politician that you know of ever been in a classroom ever in history? You know, when have you ever seen the guy from
Unless
Channel
4? Photo shoot, maybe.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're always going in there to like get their pictures taken and up their profile. Like, oh, right. look at me reading the kids. I'm basically a teacher. Yeah, that's the other thing too. Like, of the current school board in Jefferson Parish, I think one of them is a teacher. Yeah, the only one is I think Coach Benora. Let's see. While educators felt more respected by their colleagues, they also indicated that the direct supervisors showed them much more respect than their school boards, the media, elected officials, and the U.S. Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos. I found that this report focused like an exorbitant amount on Betsy DeVos, yeah, but like it, yeah. like the point stands that like school boards and you know, people outside of the classroom, people who don't have direct interactions with teachers don't understand or don't want to understand what they're, you know, what they're about.
Mm-hmm. Not sure how that lady got in position.
Well, I can tell you how. She's got a lot of money. Her brother's Eric Prince from Blackwater.
Other than money, yeah.
Yeah. She has a history of just like charterizing these schools in Michigan, and from what I understand, you know, people from Michigan have told me that that system was just completely upended and ruined by this, right. you know, and that goes to something that I would like to talk in a future episode too, because that group by like the you know, Bill Gates Foundation and like all these other groups, Edutopia, are you familiar with that one?
No,
buddy, they're bad. And I got to tell you why, but I don't have it with me in front of me right now. But it,
time,
maybe that's just a teaser for a future one.
Right.
Let's see. While the majority of educators felt they had moderate to high control over basic decisions within their classroom, their level of influence and control dropped significantly on policy decisions that directly impact their classroom, such as setting discipline policy, setting performance standards, and deciding how resources are spent. Yeah, when, like, the only thing on that last point of resources, the only thing that we get in terms of you know, resources provided by the school that we just, you know, get to choose that we want is $50 in the spring and $50 in the fall. That's
it.
Oh, no, it got up this year. It got up at, I think it was the November school board meeting. So it's 50 now. So we're rolling in and it's great. Yeah.
Awesome.
I don't know where we're going to spend all that.
Office Depot. Yep, buying that book paper.
Yeah, oh yeah, get that paper. Oh, you do graphic design too, so you need that paper.
Hey, cardstock is expensive.
Oh yeah, cardstock is expensive. Ooh, I'm just used to the, you know, the plain old white sheets.
Mm-hmm. And the thick stuff. We make business cards.
Y'all make business cards?
We can, yeah.
That's kind of cool. I might have to talk to you about that.
Mm-hmm. Design them and print them.
Cool. Policies that support healthy interactions in schools are tremendously important. The survey found that educators experience workplace bullying at a much higher rate, more than three times as high as other workers. While most educators reported that their schools have workplace harassment policies, so prohibiting bullying, smaller proportion of respondents said their schools or districts offered regular training on bullying. So I guess that's an issue that happens in any sort of like top down, you know, powerful, you know, defeating the weak situation.
You've seen it happen at my school recently.
Oh yeah, well, among like teachers or among like administrators and teachers?
No, from the administrator down to the teacher.
Wow.
And paras as well.
So from the administrator to paras?
Administrator to para, administrator to teachers. Yeah, it's just.
Oh wow. I know that exists.
That you don't care for you.
Yeah, I'm fortunate enough to not see too much of that where I'm at. But that's a real situation. And especially when you have this person, like we said before, who provides, like, who is, like, one of the decision makers, the people who are the subjective person behind the evaluation that you get, where do you go in that process, right? How do you blow the whistle on that sort of thing?
So a union, and that's pretty much, you know, they'll guide you through most of it.
That's basically what it is.
Yeah, we've been told, like, you know, once we get there, we can only do step-ups. Yeah. See how.
Teachers reporting having poor mental health for 11 or more days per month at twice the rate of the general U.S. workforce. And the mental health of the general U.S. workforce is not good, folks. So, like, for teachers to have 11 or more, like, twice the rate of that is pretty bad. They also reported lower than recommended levels of health outcomes and sleep per night. I have problems sleeping all the time. Thinking really? About, you know, the thing that I didn't do the other day. I don't know about you, but that's something I definitely.
I've noticed a change. Like, before I started teaching, I used to, like, be able to daydream about, like, stories in my head and just, like, kind of make a movie before I fall asleep. But now I'm, like, worried about, like, what's going to happen tomorrow, what am I doing with the students tomorrow, or what's going to happen if the principal does something silly, or interactions with other teachers and things. Like, you know, since it's, I guess, become more of a part of my life, it's just, like, taking over my imagination is kind of eating it up.
Yeah, it's sort of like using up all of your, like, functional, like, memory. And so like the RAM in your head is all used up, so you don't have anything else for, like, the fun stuff.
Yeah, try to, you know, fight that thought every now and then to somehow magically fall back onto it.
Mm-hmm. How do you relax? Like, what do you do to just relax? You just, like, occupy your mind with other stuff, or do you just, like,
Well, in class or at home?
Both.
In class, I relate more to my students than I do to anyone else at school because I'm closer to age to them than I am any of my coworkers.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, you know, have casual conversations with kids and, you know, just kind of get into their minds and see where they are. And then, I mean, like I said, we talk about anime, talk about games, talk about other stuff like that. And cool. When I'm at home, I write, draw, design, do things, just keep myself busy.
So you are able to continue to be creative at least.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I did lo-fi radio on YouTube.
Lo-fi radio?
Yeah.
That's you?
Lo-fi hip-hop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That's what you listen to?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
The streams music.
I listen to way too many, like, podcasts and way too much, like, news and stuff. Mm-hmm. And like the other thing is I'll, like, read way too much, just like what's going on, and I just sort of, like, keep myself way too online on things like Twitter. so I just and that doesn't like alleviate stress at all. It just occupies my mind all the time.
And it's more information being thrown in.
Yeah, I just like overload myself even more. So I can like there's this horrible thing happening while this other horrible thing is happening to me directly.
We're too aware to things that's going on, so like we're getting oversensitized.
Or desensitized, even like you just like realize that. Yeah, you just realize that. Oh my gosh! Like everything is on fire all the time, and then it's just like, well, I mean, I guess I kind of have this sense of like I must fix all of the on fire things, which isn't a great instinct, but you know,
right.
I'm not gonna stop doing that. The stressful workload, the feeling of having to be, quote, always on, the lack of resources and the burden of ever-changing expectations take a toll on teachers, and the health problems educators face are compounded by deficient building conditions, equipment and staff shortages, and insufficient time to prepare and collaborate with colleagues. Gosh, that's a lot going on in there, because it talks about always being on, which when you're dealing with, I teach fifth grade, and like fifth graders with gigantic attitudes. So like you have to always be like ready to sort of like defuse an escalatory situation.
Yeah, same for the seniors.
Yeah. I'm not trying to say teens are any easier. Right. Sure. I'm not saying teens are easy. So the burden of ever-changing expectation. I think we talked a little bit about this off air. At our meeting the other day, where it talks about like they have a new sort of program every year that's sort of like, this is going to be the agenda for what it is this year, and you sort of can't have any consistency to what you're doing, right? You said you have to like change up your lesson plans in a major way every year, if I recall correctly.
Right.
So
not just lesson plans, like the way we write out SATs, like the way you do lesson plans, the way we have to, I guess, present things in class, the way we have to, everything about school is altered in some kind of way. That it's like I'm trying to get to a norm, but that norm is just always shifted, so I can never settle. So
yeah, it's always this like this new flavor of the month, like curriculum or like system. Because like 2 years ago they started doing this PLC thing, right, where they would have us all collaborate together, and that would be the secret sauce to make it to that, so that like these kids would like suddenly score these super duper high scores. Which I mean, I'm not trying to speak like against collaboration, and I'm not trying to speak like against like communication among teachers and like monitoring, you know, whatever data or whatever, but having a very strict and specific and very prescriptive formula for doing that, and like managing it as like from the top down, is not going to solve that problem. Because you're not letting teachers do what they do in the way that they can do it. And then the last one was, respondents overwhelmingly agreed that strong educator unions are vital, because that's our way to protect one another, but they have to be strong. Anything else you wanted to add on that?
How do you think we can lower the amount of stress?
How do you think we can lower the amount of stress? I think that one of the things that would do that is to... I mean, I'm doing a research, some actual research on this topic as we speak, about teacher evaluations. First off, what they offer in terms of actual, you know, effectiveness or whatever for teachers. I mean, they're not effective. They don't really do much to tell you what a teacher is capable of and things like that. And then the other thing is to cut out this unnecessary work, right? You don't need... these, you know, you don't need these spreadsheets that you would fill out that your projections for the year. If you have a projection and a goal for the year, does that mean that you're necessarily going to teach any less like hard or whatever? That you would like, so I don't have a goal this year, so I guess I'm not going to teach division, you know, if you're teaching math, you know?
Right.
I mean, teachers, I mean, you can like write down where kids are at and monitor their scores and all that other stuff. That's fine. I'm for that. But like the idea that you can just like divine where this kid's going to be and make a plan for it. And one of these things, too, that comes down from our over the principal person is they want us to do a conference more than once a year with every student in their class. Now, I teach special education, so I only have 6 kids. Some of these other teachers have classes full of 30 kids in them, right? And and they want them to have every kid maintain a data notebook that's got all of their information. And it's not like, this is not the teacher's idea. This is the idea of administration. They want them to maintain a data notebook that has like all of their test grades, all of their quarterly, you know, assessments and all of their computer data, blah, 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 blah. They want a poster on a wall that's got their, like, where these kids are at, which I think is, I mean, I call that the shaming wall. And then they want them to have a conference with each and every one of these kids. I don't know where you find the friggin' time for this, because it's more than once. And they want you to, like, make a plan which each one of these kids, and, like this is where you tell the kid what their goal for the year is, their individualized goal for the year. So where they're at, where their goal is, and how they plan on achieving that goal. And you have to come to a consensus. You need to do that 30 times. Could you imagine?
Is it 30 per period? So it's like 120 times or something like that?
Well, I teach elementary school. So you're with the class for the whole day. We do have in fourth and fifth grade, they'll switch. So if you teach math to 60 kids, then you need to do 60 conferences. 60,
yeah. It's crazy.
It's outrageous. It's insane. Yeah. The scores, right? You need to have these kids, and you need to like show them their data, and you need to tell them, you know, what their score is, where it's at, and if it's low, like a lot of times the kids are gonna feel bad, right? Fifth grader Stevie, you're performing at a third grade level. What's your plan to get, you know, to a fifth grade level? Like, what do you think the first thing a very self-conscious fifth grader is going to think? Right? So I don't know. Yeah, they're gonna say, they're gonna have these ideas going through their heads that they're not good enough and all those other things. And it's not a thing that's good developmentally, from my professional opinion, to go in that direction. A couple real fast things. There were some other findings from this survey that talked about like other things that were stressing people, teachers specifically. And this doesn't even include like para educators and other people who work in schools who make way less money than teachers. But some other stressful factors that took place was that some of these teachers are working more than 50 hours a week because of these like long lesson plans and these like unnecessary information that you have to compile. That's gonna add to the hours that you're working, and as a necessary result, you have less time in your life to do the things that you want to do, you know?
Right.
Educators and school staff reported working more than their regularly scheduled hours 13 or 14 days per month, over two-thirds of their total working days in a month. So that goes along with the previous one. They need additional resources to do their jobs. They usually get them, but close to one-third did not. So two-thirds of people are getting the resources, one-third aren't. One-third of respondents disagreed that teachers and faculties at their schools felt safe bringing up problems and addressing issues. So like we said before, if you're bringing up an issue to someone at your school, you're bringing it up to your administrator. You're telling your administrator, the person that gives you the evaluation, I don't have the things that I need to do this job. You know, what are they going to think?
All right.
You know, they're going to think that, that's a you problem, not a resources problem, because that other teacher can do it. Why can't you?
Yeah, the comparison situations are very bad.
Like, yeah.
If this person can do it, you can do it. It's not a great...
Right. But that's sort of the natural thing that you would, expect. Even if the administrator wouldn't want to do that, you wouldn't seek that help, because what if they do think that? That could just have a chilling effect, right?
Yep. Every class is completely different, regardless if you teach the same subject or not, because the students are just, like, so varied nowadays.
Yeah,
like, you have some, like, extremely awesome, like, calm and collected students that do what they need to do. And then you have the complete opposite with, like, kids bouncing off the walls and stuff. That's, like, not even a joke. Like, they literally charge a wall and bounce off of it. Like, they hit that bad.
Sometimes they'll bring the wall down, depending on the kid. So I think that's enough for that survey, unless there's something else you wanted to add to it.
That's about it.
Yeah, there was really, I mean, the situation right now is pretty tough, and the way that teachers are sort of like pushed to the limit, and I don't see a way, like, in a top-down system where teachers are like so highly pressured, I don't see a way out of it in the near term without some sort of major change in the structure that would you know move things around. I don't know. Maybe I'm being pessimistic, but it feels to me that the way that the entire, like, it's a result of the way that the system is designed, not necessarily the principal, you know, the principal actors within it.
It's more like a guess and check situation. Like, they try something up top and then they hope it works in the bottom.
Right. It's a great idea. So we're just going to like impose it on this 80 school district. And like, that is something like that is something that you can do to that large of amount of people that will work for everybody. That's ridiculous.
Right.
Or for even like the majority, or I'm like every even like percentage in like a school of 50,000 kids, like 1% of that is like what, 500 kids. So if you have, you know, one, am I doing that right? Am I doing the math right? I'm doing math live on air. So, so yeah, 500 is 1%. So if 1% of the school population in a 50,000 kid school district like doesn't get is affected negatively by a policy, that's 500 kids. That's half of 1,000 kids. So that is huge stakes. So what I wanted to bring here forward is another article called "A Career Without a Union." This is about a teacher who is finishing up at the University of Connecticut, and they were working in a district in Connecticut. Wait, I'm sorry, in California, in a charter school that did not have a union local. So this kind of goes along with what we were talking about, because that was that survey that we just talked about was a national survey, and this is like one specific instance in a charter school, because the school district that we both work in is not a charter district predominantly. Our school district is predominantly populated by public schools. So I'll just start reading through, and we can sort of comment as we go. A Career Without a Union. So this is written by Keith Lambert, Education World Associate Contributing Editor. So they write for this publication, but they were a teacher without a union. So when I was finishing up my master's degree, and at the University of Connecticut, I decided to make a list. It was a list of all the things I did not want to be as an educator. The general idea was that if at any point in my career I felt or thought enough of these things, it meant that my younger self would want me to retire from the profession. After 13 years, I still have this list and check it periodically, and in some respects, I think I was a bit ambitious in my assumption that the career would be so consistently blissful, but overall, I've done that. So apparently, they're happy with it, having been a teacher.
That's an interesting way to approach.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I don't know. That's not my style.
That's being like really optimistic of the outcome.
Yeah, like really idealistic. It's almost like that's sort of made up. Like you saying that so it sounds good in this piece. I nearly dropped out of education altogether before finding a small environmental leadership charter school back in Connecticut that seemed to align with my values. They made me an offer, and I eagerly took it. So he's taking a job back in Connecticut. So he was doing AmeriCorps stuff in California, and he moves back to Connecticut. Being both small and a charter school, they did not have a union, and that's very common among schools, especially in right-to-work states. New Orleans is an excellent example, because in Orleans Parish, in order for a school to have representation, they would have to either have, and I'm not 100% sure on this, and it would be good to get an Orleans Parish person on this, or a charter school specialist, but they have to organize in each individual school or in each individual network. So in order to have a local, the local for the entire parish is United Teachers of New Orleans, Utno. But in order for each of these schools has each of these charter schools has a school board, like their own little, like it's not a, it's like a mini school board, but it's more of like an executive board or like a
council.
Like they sort of like they act like a school board, but they're more like a business board, right? So you can't like run for a school board of Lusher Charter School. You need, you're like, you have a financial stake in the matter and you're appointed that way. And you cannot deal with every single one of those schools as Utno. You would have to have a functioning unit within each one of these schools that would deal that would deal with each one of these boards, which is just a nightmare in terms of organizing, right?
Right.
Like, can you imagine putting together a local in every school, getting union representation in each of them, and then having them like do contract negotiations with every board? That's crazy. You'd need to have some way to just organize the whole thing, or just some basement like bill of rights that every teacher would be able to like be protected. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons charter schools are so popular, because it's so difficult to organize against them. Anyway, by the time I'd finished my degree, I'd been quite disillusioned with the American public education system. I had started work by finding small unaccredited at-risk youth school and joining AmeriCorps. Being both small and a charter school, they did not have a union, and at the time that was a selling point. I thought about my list, and it felt like a good educator should always have an axe looming over their head. What the hell is this part? This part really freaked me out. I should always have an axe over my head. I said to myself, if I'm not doing my job, I don't want to be protected in any way. I want to be fired. Can you imagine even like thinking that like if I fuck this up, I will be fired and I deserve it?
No. So if I'm fucking up, someone please tell me to do it right, or show me how to do it right.
Yeah.
Not just let me go immediately.
Yeah. The thing is that like you're gonna, if you're in a situation where you have that much pressure on you, you are going to go with like you essentially have no professional autonomy in decision making, because there is like a management, like there's a style a system that's in place that encourages you to essentially do what you're told to do, or you're like maybe it's a little bit results oriented or whatever, but if you do what you told them to, they told you to do, and you fail, well, you're just doing what they said, right?
Right.
If you do your own thing and fail, well, what are you doing? Why wouldn't you do the thing everybody told you to do? Right?
If you're purposely doing something wrong, then yeah.
And the truth is, for so many such schools doing absolutely phenomenal work with kids, they simply couldn't function without the tenacity and flexibility not having a formal union can allow. Tragedy here is not lost on me. So this guy's actually kind of like sympathetic to the idea of like destroying unions. or not having unions or whatever. But that's really sort of interesting to me, because that falls into this set of sensibilities that the worker should not be protected, right? Mm-hmm. That's somehow secondary to whatever the outcome is. And like it's almost like the worker has to be in a fairly stable position. Like, it's a prerequisite for there to be good outcomes, in my view. He continues on, and so I was worked to the bone. Meetings ran long, contracts were adjusted, pay was frozen and cut. Curriculum was written and rewritten. After school programming and committees went unpaid, and the volunteering was an unspoken assumption of my job. My work days were persistently chaotic, with no real security and an endless ravenous system. I could give it my all, yet it was never enough, and I loved it. It was I was in my early 20s, could work well into the night, and still be somewhat conscious in the morning. I could sacrifice every weekend because this, in my mind, was truly giving back. So this guy is getting chewed up and spit out.
You know? And still jolly about it, too.
Yeah, I was like, oh, look at me. I'm doing the Lord's work or whatever. Like, I don't know about that. like there has to come a point where, like, you're... Like, you have to, like, the person doing the job has to be, they have to be valued in some way. Like that is not a sustainable way. That is a way to get teachers to quit.
Yeah, you know? I kind of figured myself doing that when I first started, because I picked up a lot of hats, like, at the beginning of teaching. Like, because a lot of my other teachers are veteran, I wouldn't say burnt out, but they're, like, dry to being, like, the goody, like, yes men. Principles and things,
Right.
But I didn't know any better back then, so I was like, sure, I'll do that. Sure, I'll do this. And then I got like 18 hats, and I was like, all I'm getting is pats on the back, and this is not very well worth my time.
Yeah, that'll do anything. And then a lot of times too, viewed as like earning your stripes or whatever. But like, yeah. I sort of reject that frame too.
Yeah.
After almost 15 years under the system, however, can you imagine 15 years of that? I am feeling the fatigue and that elusive personal life we teachers attempt to maintain. So, I have
wait. It took him 15 years to realize that he was.
I have no idea. Oh my god.
That's a slow response. But keep going.
Apparently, he had a little bit of autonomy because here's a part I skipped. It said if he wanted to, he can completely rewrite his curriculum and he didn't have to ask. When we had a problem to solve, our staff meetings would run well into the night. So that's the problem. When we needed to put more in more hours to tackle school-wide issue, we could just adjust our schedules immediately to solve it. That's a problem. There was a flexibility there that seemed to be very responsive to the needs of our students and the sense of humanity there. Where, well, not your humanity, dude. Your humanity is just to work all the time. We were a scrappy little school that was willing to do more to serve our students. Sustainability never once crossed my mind. Yeah, that is not sustainable, though. So, yeah. Over almost 15 years under the system, I'm beginning to feel fatigued. Yes, because you're killing yourself.
Right.
So, I guess the one thing that he liked was the fact that he had some liberty and that he could, like, have some control over his curriculum. But, like, every issue that wasn't, like, a curriculum issue was just, like, a completely difficult or just their entire responsibility. Let's see. I'm feeling the fatigue in that elusive personal life we teachers attempt to maintain. I have just bought my first house and I'm planning a wedding. After 15 years of working, he's finally buying a house. And I'm hoping to start a family. And despite my love for current school system, I am starting to eye the unionized public school systems in the area. I'm worrying that, unprotected, I may soon not have the time and energy to give to my school or my family. So he won't be able to go like late into the night and like be up at 8, you know, be at school at 8:20 for another 30 years or 15 years. Mm-hmm. It's not that my school by any means would intentionally overwhelm or exhaust their educators. Oh no, they would never do that.
They would never do that.
I have never worked in an environment that felt more like a family. Jeez, what kind of family did he work at? Like was his dad his boss?
Right.
Did he like work for his dad? Or like, you know, like I've worked at a lot of restaurants in my time, and when they would have like kids that worked for it, like the family or whatever, they were just expected to be labor at times, and they would like their allowance would be what their pay was. It's just that when our education system is woefully underfunded and our standardized expectations are unreasonably high, it's a dangerous combination for unintentional abuse. If we always need more and always have less, the weight of that burden will always fall on the backs of the educators. And that's the thing. So if we're going to have this incredible focus on standardized tests, there's going to be a certain amount of pressure on these politicians or whatever, or these school boards. But the pressure isn't for them to do work. The pressure is for them to get their teachers to do work, right? Or to get the results or whatever it is. So it basically just, they're just looking down the hierarchy to like the lowest person and then just asking the most of them.
Yeah.
We are only human beings. We have our limitations. Unions can help strike that balance in a district. So it goes on and on and on. And it talks about how teacher union membership is actually going down right now, and that's partially because of the advancement of charter schools. But the only thing that can stop this sort of like top-down bureaucracy from, in my opinion, the only thing that can stop this top-down bureaucracy from just crushing the individuals who work in it in the gears of its own, you know, self-redundancies and whatever. The only thing they can do it are teachers or workers, like not just teachers, like every worker in a school just banding together and providing a counterweight. And you have the leverage to do it in terms of teachers.
Can you
because
strike
you're the ones that have to do it.
They can strike without a union though, right?
The charter schools?
Yeah.
Yeah, they can.
I mean, it's a risky situation because
it's a very, like, yeah, that would be, I mean,
lack
I'm not,
of tenure and stuff.
yeah, they're essentially at-will employees, so they can be fired immediately and replaced with some, you know, Teach for America person. They probably won't be easily replaceable in terms of, like, the quality of what they provide, but they can be replaced.
That's part of the problem, too. Mm-hmm. That, I guess, you can't have a voice because you have no power?
Yeah. The only way you can have any power is if you are, like, banded together and you can actually find a way to push back, and no individual could ever do that, right? No individual can just, like, go up to the superintendent and say, your policy is terrible and you stink, and, you know, but if you have a significant enough number of teachers, so like we were saying, the teachers could strike, you would have to get enough of them, like teachers at that school, you would have to get enough of them so that they cannot be replaced. Mm-hmm. Right? Or they cannot be easily replaced. So if, like, you know, fourth and fifth grade teachers or whatever, they're like, I'm not putting up with this stuff anymore because we're the ones that have to put up with, do the testing and all that other stuff. And then, you know, kindergarten through third grade and then sixth grade through 12th grade, they're not on board. Guess who's screwed? Guess who either can't strike because they're going to get fired and replaced, or can strike and get fired and replaced. That's just going to be the fourth and fifth graders, you know, fifth grade teachers. Yeah. So you need to have enough so that you can, you know, bring the system, you know, at least so that in an academic sense, so that you can plausibly, you know, bring the system to a halt, or at least affect it in an adverse way that you don't, that they don't want.
But how many teachers do you have per school?
I mean, I guess it depends on if it's a pre-K through fifth, or if it's a lot of the ones that are really getting popular now are these K-8 schools, which are way bigger, and the needs of a kindergarten teacher and the needs of an eighth grade teacher are way different. Right. So that's a line that you can sort of, like, split, you know, them on. It varies, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here. There can be different sizes of them. I mean, you can have one that's got 50 teachers and workers, and you can have another school that's got, you know, 20. It doesn't say how big this school is, unfortunately.
It's speaking without a union, extreme risky.
Yeah. And I do want to talk maybe a little bit later about the steps towards organizing in a charter school is, and maybe we can bring some people from districts that have predominantly charter schools in them to talk about their experience. And I know there's work out there that's done that talks about like stories of people who have tried to organize charter schools. Those have been successful, those who have not. I don't know if you pay attention to the New Orleans situation, but I think it was probably about 2-3 years ago, Lusher Charter School, I mentioned them earlier, they tried to organize, and they kind of got all the classic, you know, like if you read any of the, you know, any stories about, you know, classic labor organizing, the threats of everybody getting fired and the sort of like bullying from management and stuff like that, the whipping votes against, because you need 50% plus one vote to declare that you have a union. And Lusher tried to organize and they failed by just like a handful of votes. And it was a real, real, you know, kick in the teeth. It was pretty big news in the Lens. I'd have to pull it up. I wish they would cover Orleans Parish, Jefferson Parish more, because they do a pretty decent job covering Orleans and a lot of the, you know, crazy stuff that goes on in there. But they don't really touch Jefferson enough, I don't find.
As a matter of fact, man, within the next hour, they're covering funds for unnecessary hotel stays.
Okay. I've been looking for this, and I've been hearing, like, everybody's talking about it, and I'm trying to find this information, and I can't. You know, like...
It's earned tonight.
Tonight at 10. I keep trying to tell people to come to the next school board meeting, and they're like, oh, what's going on with this scandal there? You know, I'm just like...
Right.
I'm just like... look at me. Because we have pay raises going on the ballot for all Jefferson Parish employees, and that's going to be going on the ballot on April 28th, and the meeting where what the form of that pay raise is going to take is going to be on Wednesday. So there's a very strong material benefit that teachers can get from like attending this meeting and like seeing what's going on, and they're worried about the scandal.
Oh no, right, they just want the juicy drama.
Yeah, what? Yeah, they want to watch Shakespeare when they should be, you know. That's one of the things we can talk about maybe in a future episode too, is just sort of like experiences trying to get people to like just to, you know, to jump in and to do their part.
Yeah.
And like, what are the points like where you can just like throw your hands up and give up? And what are the points where you're like, okay, I need to like keep working on this person,
right?
Because that's an interesting thing. I was thinking we could do organizer training and things like that. I've had ideas for this too with new teachers, but I think doing it in a multitude of formats would probably be the best, just so that it could be accessible to as wide amount of people as possible. All right, well, I think that could do it for the first episode of Time for Action. Thank you for joining us. Once again, my name is Jeff, and that's Josh over there. And until next time.
I mean, goodbye.
Bye, everybody. Hello, goodbye. There being this. Aloha. All right.